You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Greetings, I am Joseph Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the brand new version of The Waterthorn of Rassilon.
Was I also supposed to be doing a voice?
Yes.
You did not clear this with me ahead of time.
No, it was a surprise. I'm going to be doing this voice for the entire podcast from here on out.
God, please don't.
Yeah, okay. Today we're going to be talking about the first serial of the 24th season of Doctor Who, the first serial of the 7th Doctor as portrayed by Sylvester McCoy, Time of the Rani, which consists of 4 episodes that aired from September 7th, 1987 to September 28th, 1987.
True facts!
And I want to give a special shout out to Matt Golden for sponsoring this episode.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
Golden!
You can check him out at mattgolden.xyz.
You can?
Yeah, he changed his website, I guess.
Neat!
mattgolden.xyz. So, a lot to talk about right here at the top.
Let's talk about the big New Who news.
New news and New Who.
We know
that's the name of the segment.
We know who the next showrunner of Doctor Who is going to be.
It's the old showrunner of Doctor Who, Russell Terwilliger Davies.
Terwilliger?
Yeah. Do you not know that's what the T stood for?
Yeah, I feel like you just made that up.
You're right. It is actually Russell the Davies.
I mean, everybody here knows that I respect a good the.
I actually don't know what the T stands for. Do you? I don't know what the T stands for. His real name is Stephen Russell Davies.
Oh, so it's just for spice.
This is some bullshit. Wait, if he had kept his name, it would have been Stephen, which we've had another Stephen Moffat. A lot of Stephens. This is the important things to talk about when we talk about that Russell T. Davies is taking over Doctor Who again.
Do you have any feelings about that news, Joseph?
Yeah. What's the T stand for?
Are you just Googling what does the T stand for?
What does the T stand for? You know, no other Doctor Who news thing is doing this right now, I'll tell you that. They're having actual opinions. What does the T stand for in Russell T. Davies? Stephen Russell Davies was born... That's not an answer!
There's no T in any... Well, none of them start with T.
There's no answer.
Russell T. Davies, what the fuck?
What does your T stand for, my dude?
The T stands for the Doctor.
That's probably it. Okay, so yes, I do have feelings. What? Okay. Huh? And I don't know. Sure? It's a lot of conflicted emotions.
Yeah, I feel like part of the reason for the conflicting emotions is that it's like, I have no doubt that RTD is going to do a good job. I have no doubt about that. It feels like a panic decision.
And possibly a step backwards.
It feels like, you know, a decision from the people in charge of I don't know, just do what worked again.
Yeah, it seems like they're making a safe choice, which I don't want Doctor Who to do.
But I don't think RTD would come back unless he had new ideas.
But and you know who else has new ideas? Different people.
Different people. People of color. Women. Women of color. You could let them show run. It could happen. Those people are out there.
Non-binary.
I don't have any lack of faith in RTD to, because I know a lot of people are, people think that he's going to just go and do, 2005 Doctor Who again. And it's I've got more faith in him as, a person and a writer than that. But
what if that's what they're specifically wanting?
That is the thing that feels like, that it feels like a call from the people in charge to just be just put it back. Just put it back the way it was so that it will start making money again. Instead of giving it to, you know, a voice that hasn't been able to be heard before.
Me?
No, love, no.
Chris Terry?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Give it to Christine Cherry. Give it to Vince. But, like, those people are out there. I promise you they're out there.
They probably need to be British.
Probably. I mean, it's different, I know, with show running because, I mean, show running is a whole different job. And if you don't have people who've had the opportunity to do it, but, like, man, start working on that pipeline now.
I think it's a little too early to tell what's going to happen. I mean, I'm waiting to hear who the other writers are going to be.
Yeah. I was really excited that maybe this meant that...
Jimmy Matheson could come back.
I know that dude's got plans.
I'm waiting to see who the next doctor is going to be. That's also will be a good indicator of how it might go.
Yeah, because I think the fear is that it is a, like, reactionary, like, put it back. Don't try anything new.
We're going to get David Tennant back.
Right. So I've seen a lot of predictions that are like, obviously the next doctor is going to be a man. Because like they tried it being a woman and that didn't work. And it's like, man,
that's not what
didn't work. Doctor didn't work. Doctor Who hasn't worked a lot of times and we never went, oh, well, we just can't have him be a man anymore. That was the problem.
And I'd honestly say every doctor we've had has been great. The only problem has been the writing, more the behind the scenes creative stuff than the like on screen talent. For the doctors, for some companions.
I do have a prediction, which is that Jodie Whittaker felt like a very Sixth Doctor era. And I think with RTD, we're going to be heading into a very Seventh Doctor era.
I actually want to talk about that for a second because I think it's not necessarily a Sixth Doctor era. It is a reaction to the Sixth Doctor era, which Chibnall famously did not care for. I think Chibnall was trying to do the Sixth Doctor era but better, but hit a lot of the same problems that the show had with that. He's doing a lot of the same stuff, but he didn't like that era.
Like, famously, right?
Yeah, and I think, like, instead he's like, well, the problem was that the doctor was mean, so I'm going to make a very kind, nice doctor.
Right. I can actually see that.
And then, oh, they rushed the Valyard and threw in this doctor, like, out of nowhere. I'm going to set it up and have it make sense and it'll be a whole big thing. And not just, like, an afterthought. So, Ruth.
Right. You know what? Credit where credit's due.
Ruth is good.
Ruth is one of the best things you ever did, Chibnall. You got Ruth.
So, yeah, I only thought of this, like, the other day. I think he is specifically doing the Sixth Doctor era.
Do you know what's also wild? But
what he thinks is a better version of
it. Is that the last season of Chibnall is going to be all one continuous. It's going to be fucking Trial of the Time Lord.
Yeah, probably.
I think we're about to get Chibnall's take on Trial of the Time Lord. I think that's what the next season is. And then we're going to go straight into, like, RTD's going to come back and be like, no, you guys forgot about the camp. The camp is what makes it good. I really think it's going to be like a direct parallel, all of it.
I kind of hope so. I'd be for it.
The other parallel that would be really interesting is that this would be like the most 20s thing ever. And I don't know what that means.
20s? Like 2020s?
Yeah.
Okay, not like flappers and...
Yeah, no. I mean, because the one like thing that we keep talking about Seven, even though we're like just now talking about the first episode, is how...
Oh yeah, that's what we're going to talk about this
time. We'll get there, I promise, is how aggressively 80s it is.
Yeah.
So like RTD's first second season...
His first second season is
going to be aggressively 20s, whatever that means. We don't really know yet. But it'll be aggressively that thing.
I can't wait to figure out what that is.
It's probably not good.
It's weird. Like, I feel like his first season of Doctor Who is already kind of dated, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's been on for a while. So it's interesting that he's coming back.
I am glad that he will have the anniversary, because it would have been a weird...
Oh, if Chibnall did it?
Not if Chibnall did it. I'm just saying it would have been like a weird first day on your job. That's a hard task to put on, like, a brand new person.
That's true. I hope that he brings back Moffat for, like, an episode.
Scary two-parters.
I think some of Moffat's best stuff was when he was just... He didn't have to focus on an entire season. He could just do a one-off and be done.
God, could you imagine if we got, like, a season full of Midnights? I mean, I'll say it right now. Midnight is, like, a top-tier episode of Doctor Who, and I'll fight anyone who doesn't agree.
One of the fears I've been seeing from people online is that he's going to bring back Rose.
Yeah, I don't.
And that I'm not for.
I can't imagine that he would.
Billie Piper said she's interested in coming back.
I've got no interest in that. So, you know what? Let Billie Piper be the doctor. I went on like a huge rant the other day about how you can just like fuck the rules. You can do anything in writing. We've done similar things before. Let Ruth be the next doctor.
Yeah, do it.
You can figure it out. I believe in you. You're smart people.
What my theory, what I would do is I would have her choose to be Ruth. Not the same Ruth. The same actress, obviously. But, like, she's on a quest to find out who this Ruth Doctor is. She becomes that Ruth Doctor.
Because she's, like, thinking about it as she regenerates. Which there's precedent for.
Then you could have a two Doctors situation. But it's both past Ruth and new Ruth. They're technically separate incarnations of the Doctor.
Make this happen, please. Yeah. All right, we've got to talk about Classic Who. That's what we're here for.
Okay, so and we're not avoiding it because we think it's bad. Because some people think the serial is bad. I don't.
We were, like, on board from the moment of the new introduction, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, there are some things that are not great in this serial, but overall, let's get into
it. Talk about being aggressively 80s. Like, let's talk about that new introduction.
Well, before we get to the introduction, they have a pre-credit sequence.
Oh, you're right!
Let's get to it. Episode 1, which I have called The Two Males. So yes, we have a pre-credit sequence that just starts, like, right off. The TARDIS is getting attacked. There's like
a 3D TARDIS.
Yeah, it's like spinning around in space and there's laser beams. It's like, it is super 80s. The Doctor and Mel fall down and the Doctor dies. I guess the Ronnie enters and there's a unseen furry creature who we won't see in full for like 3 fucking episodes. Rolls over Sylvester McCoy in a wig. Because Colin Baker did not return. And then he regenerates into Sylvester McCoy without a wig. Also, there's a brief scene of a guy watching the TARDIS crash. His name is Icona. Well, he's the most boring part of this whole serial.
Don't worry about it.
But that's all before the credits start. It's all just like, we're just thrown right into it. I also want to say there is an extended version of these episodes on the Blu-ray. I watched them. I actually took the episodes and put them side by side so I could see.
Of course you did, you beautiful nerd. It
was kind of pointless. I know we did a poll where we said we were going to watch the extended one, but we watched the regular one because they do change the special effect of how.
We can't have that.
Yeah, they changed the regeneration effect, and I wanted to see the shitty
original
wig.
Original bullshit only.
Which is they roll him over and the screen kind of goes white, and then we see it comes back down and we see Colin Baker's face that they've superimposed over it. And then it turns into Sylvester McCoy. But
is that the only real difference?
Well, they also add in some CG ships attacking the TARDIS. Like, they're just like little rainbow things. They look cool, but also, like, what's the point of that? Nearly everything else is just extended, like, people walking into a shot or leaving a shot. That is 95% of the extended cut.
It's just the rough cut that needed to be tightened up.
There's not even that much new dialogue. Like, there's maybe a little bit of dialogue. There's like one joke. Also, like at the end of the very last shot is Sylvester McCoy shutting the TARDIS. That's the end of the whole serial. They like show the TARDIS fade out and people watching it fade out and looking a little confused. Every bit of it, I was like, I see why they cut this out. And now they have to like shove, like just move the music cues around. It's bad. I don't know why they did it. It was not good. Anyway, that's my thoughts on the extended cut. Don't watch it.
Intro.
Okay, so yes, we have that pre-credit sequence. And then we get the credit sequence, which has a lot of 3D.
It's like, just like so much 3D. Shit, y'all, we got 3D modeling.
Apparently some of it was like really difficult, specifically like the letters that tumble, like the letters tumble at the screen and then it like the camera shifts.
Yeah.
And they roll into place. Like, it does, like, a three... I don't know. It's really fucking cool. There's also, like, a big purple, like, galaxy thing.
I did not realize that the face in space was going to continue all the way to 7. I kind of thought that was... Like, what does it start with 3?
I think it might have started with 2. Technically, 1 had his face in space, but it was an in-credit sequence, but...
Yeah, I did not realize that this was going to carry through all the way through. Why did we drop that? Bring that back. Put their face back in space.
Speaking of his face in space, it's silver.
It's silver and it winks at you. And it's not great.
So, fun story about that. They came up with, like, the concept for it. I watched the making of the title sequence. Like, the guy who did all the 3D and stuff. The only thing... He's like, I still really like it. The only thing he didn't like is it shows that big, like, the purple galaxy thing and, like, some, like, meteorites or whatever tumble into it. And he's like, I hate those rocks. They look so bad. That's the only thing he doesn't like. He likes the TARDIS and the big blue... Like, the TARDIS in a big blue sphere and it goes through. But in the original concept, they're like, we'll have his face... And we'll make it silver. He's like, that's what I want to do is have it be silver. And we'll do the wink and everything too. So it's like not just so static. And they're like, cool, we'll do that. And then he's like, just get me some pictures of his face and I'll take care of it. And they painted his whole face silver. And he was like, they didn't have to do that. I was going to do it.
Oh no.
Digitally. I was going to color it. But they went and put full silver paint all over his whole face. It's like, nice. That's amazing.
I will say, out of like as much as I like, I'm all about this intro, the logo's fine.
Yeah, I like the tumbling letters, but yeah, the logo's fine. They also like put the title of the episode underneath of it, which is new because usually the title fades out and then the episode title comes on. But the theme song is still good. I don't think it's as good as the Trial of the Time Lord version, but it's still really good. It's still fun, and everything is just so exciting and new and fun, and I'm here for it. So on to the episode itself. Post-credit. We find out what the Ronnie's up to. She is using the people of this planet, the Lacertians. Specifically, she has two that work with her primarily, Baeus and Sarn.
I definitely read that as Baeus and Sam. I'm looking at the notes and I was like, how come one's named Baeus and one's named Sam?
It's Sarn. An R and an N do look like an M.
Especially when you're supposed to be wearing glasses, but lost them 2 years ago.
So she is using them to kidnap geniuses. Specifically, we see Einstein. I think we also later see Louis Pasteur and somebody else. I don't remember. I don't know how they're stealing them.
I don't know. And also why.
I guess her TARDIS.
Are they all geniuses from Earth? Like, that seems like low grade genius.
There was a scene originally where we were going to see Baeus and Sarn kidnap Einstein as he's talking to the president about the bomb. They cut that scene out to put the regeneration sequence in. But that was not the original scene that Pip and Jane Baker wrote. They wanted it to be Solomon, King Solomon from the Bible. And he's going to do the split the baby scene. And they come and interrupt that and kidnap him.
Because he's wise?
Because he's wise. The wisdom of Solomon.
I just feel like, man, there are aliens that know time travel.
To be fair, one of the geniuses they want to get is the Doctor. Okay. But, like, Pip and Jane were like,
they've got space travel. This dude wanted to cut a baby in half. Like...
J&T is like, I don't know who Solomon is. And...
Really? Yeah,
and J&T had also just brought in Andrew Cartmell. He's the new script editor. They just brought him in, and he was like, I don't know who Solomon is either. If we don't know who it is, the audience isn't going to know who it is. So they, like, told him to cut it and change it to Einstein. Pip and Jane Baker apparently did not like Andrew Cartmell.
It is a fascinating, like, it goes from being a religious reference to a very specifically scientific one, which is interesting, but also bonkers to just claim not to know who Solomon is.
Okay, but yeah, but like, we both grew up
very Christian.
Yeah,
yeah.
So there's probably people who don't know who Solomon is. So like the Pip and Jane were like, he came in and he was new, and I don't think he knew what he was doing, and He was finding his feet, and it was probably hard for him to get a script that was
as good as ours.
Yeah, it was finished, and he didn't need to do anything to it.
Oh, Pip and Jane.
And he was like, I got it. I was like, I don't like this. This is so old-fashioned and not at all what I want to do, but it's like too late to do anything about it. So like, I don't think he really, Andrew Cartmell's vision, I guess, doesn't really start until next serial, really. But
that actually explains a lot about the unevenness of the serial. It's two different visions kind of colliding of what, two different visions of what Doctor Who is.
Yeah, because the script actually predated Cartmell. Like, Cartmell came on after and was like, hey, we need to fix some stuff real quick. But yeah, I don't think Cartmell likes this serial at all. J&T likes it, but or liked it. But anyway, they're kidnapping some geniuses, putting them in a little bed thing where their heads are hooked up to machinery. And they have a nice little digital placard above their head that says who they are.
It's very important to label your specimens.
Then she walks into like the little main room where the doctor, still in the Sixth Doctor's outfit, by the way, she brought his umbrella in?
Yeah.
Why?
It's a nice umbrella.
It seems like unnecessary to have brought the umbrella in.
She does lay, it is like laying next to him, isn't it?
But the doctor wakes up and he's like, that's a good nap and I'm going to talk a lot real fast. And some quick questions though. Who am I? Where am I? Who are you?
This idea is absolutely delightful, by the way.
What idea?
The idea of a villain taking advantage of the doctor's regeneration sickness. Also, regeneration sickness always is like a favorite of mine. Always, always good. It's like writing a character drunk. It's very fun to do. I think you had a character in something that you written who just gained an alcohol problem because you had so much fun writing him drunk.
Yeah.
Was that a thing in space?
That was a thing in space, yeah.
Like,
Alan.
Having a character, I don't know if it like satisfies like an ADHD part of me to like have a character just kind of like verbalizing all their all over the place thoughts. It's very fun to watch. And plus, sometimes it's like a Fifth Doctor thing where they're like, oh no, I'm going to be all fainty and weakly and everyone's going to have to take care of me. So good.
That was a chef's kiss if you were unaware. But yeah, he wakes up. Rambles a bit, falls down a whole bunch because he does recognize the Ronnie and like, you're evil, and tries to run away from her and falls down some stairs. He falls down those stairs at least twice.
It's such a good fall. It's such a good pratfall.
Apparently he used to do clown stuff, so.
Very on brand for the doctor.
He threatens to break something when we see the coolest monster POV shot I think that's been done in Doctor Who. We still don't see the creature, but I'm going to tell you, it's called a Tetrap. Which is an anagram for pet rat.
There's so many anagrams in this script.
Pip and Jane, you gotta stop. There's a tetrap named Yurok, who shoots him with a tiny net and he falls down and electrocutes him. But the POV shot of this creature, because we'll eventually see it has four eyes, I think. Like one on each side of his fucking head. So it can see behind him. So when we see a POV shot, it's like an amalgamation of every eyeball. So like we see like overlaid shots of like what's in front of him, what's behind him, and what's to the sides. It's really cool.
Not to get us off on another tangent, but I can't hear the word POV without thinking about the one time that you met somebody who was only familiar with that as a porn term.
Yeah, because I said POV shot and like he's like, oh, we know what you do. And I was like, what are you talking about? And he's like, that's a porn reference. I'm like, no, it's not. It means point of view. It's a filmmaking term, not a porn term.
I think about that on a daily basis. You can go back to talking about Doctor Who.
So anyway, this tetrap, whose name is Yurok, we'll eventually learn. He talks at some point. Shoots them with a tiny net. He gets knocked out. And then the Ronnie injects the doctor with a shot that gives him amnesia. I thought it was part of the regeneration thing, but it's not. It's that shot.
I mean, it probably doesn't help.
Yeah. The regeneration sickness doesn't help. But this is specific. Because he does. He's like, you're the Ronnie. He knows that immediately. But she injects him with something to fuck up his memory a little bit more. I didn't catch that my first go through. I caught it on making gifs and stuff. Anyway, meanwhile, there's this other guy that I talked about briefly. His name is Icona. He's also a Lycurtian. By the way, they just look. What do they look like? They're yellow and pink.
Yeah, they mostly just look like dudes.
And they run really stupidly.
They do?
They run with their arms behind their backs.
This is not a thing that I noticed.
They look like, what is it, Naruto? Is that what it is, where they run like that? That's what they run like. I know there's some anime thing where they run with their arms.
It's Naruto.
I got it. I knew it.
You know about the animes.
I know about the animes. But anyway, he goes and grabs Mel from the TARDIS, picks her up and carries her out because she's still unconscious. But she wakes up and runs off. And then she bumps into Sarn, who was also running away from the Ronnie. I don't remember why. She said something to the Ronnie and she ran off. She was the other, I don't know, assistant helping capture geniuses. She bumps into Mel and then she runs off and then she trips a wire. and explodes.
She trips a wire into the most amazing special effect.
She is encased inside of a pink balloon, a pink ball, a globe that spins really fast. The effect looks amazing. It flies off into the air and then crashes into a mountain and explodes.
I have such mixed feelings about this because...
why is it so overly complicated?
It's an amazing effect. It's really fun to watch. It's a terrible trap. Just explode the first time.
Right? Why doesn't it just trigger an explosion? Why has it got to trigger a balloon that throws you at a mountain, then explodes?
I get it. It looks really cool.
If anything, why not just a balloon that, like, encapsulates you and then closes?
Squishes you.
Oh, closes around you. There's just so many easier ways to kill a person. But it leaves behind her skeleton, which has a little tail on it and, like, a rimmed skull thing. Like, it's got, like, a big back.
So you know it's not human.
Yeah, it's not human. I laughed really hard at it, though, because it was, like, so cartoonishly stupid. The bubble explodes, and then skeleton. And Icona runs up, thinks Mel did this somehow, and recaptures her and takes her away. They kind of wander around a lot this episode and don't do much.
Yeah, there's a lot of walking for them.
They're the most boring part of the serial. So, the doctor wakes up again.
It's almost like they weren't sure that they were going to have Mel when they wrote the script.
Well, I don't know. Mel's very important in this story because of what happens now. The doctor wakes up a second time and he sees Mel. And Mel turns around and it's the Ronnie.
This is so good.
She has a red wig on. She's got the exact same outfit. I don't know where she got that. I mean, she saw it in the TARDIS, I guess. She must have, like, replicated it real quick. But she's doing the voice. She does a pretty good job doing the voice. She's basically like, yeah, hey, I'm Mel. And he's like, what? And he's like, yeah, we were working on this thing and exploded. And then you passed out. Anyway, you're awake now. Fix it. We were in the middle of fixing this device. Fix it.
There's two things that I really love about this. One, I remember watching it and being like, I can't believe the Ronnie is straight up admitting that there's stuff that the doctor could solve that she couldn't. Two, she's not really. She's going about it in the most elaborate way possible so that she doesn't have to admit that.
That's true. But again, I don't know. I don't know if we know her character as well as, say, like, the Master. So maybe she is fine with the doctor being smart and using his knowledge, you know?
Yeah.
She's probably less concerned with that than the Master is.
Everybody's got their own area of expertise, which is something that she says. You are always the best at... I think that the thing that she says is, like, thermodynamics or something, which is like, oh, Ronnie, I believe in you, your ability to know those things. It is. I like the Ronnie a lot.
I do, too. I think she's a little bit better than the Master.
I kind of agree.
She was very excited to do this serial, too. She's like, she asked if she could come back, so.
Like, the Master's motivation is 90% flirting with the Doctor. Whereas the Ronnie is like, I am doing a thing. I was doing a science, and I really don't give a shit about anything else. I don't give a shit about ethics. I don't give a shit about feelings. Like, it's just kind of a more interesting character.
The actress was doing Dynasty at the time, which is huge, and she was huge on it. But she's like, I'm real bored of, like, just this basic soap opera bullshit. Put me back on Doctor Who. I had fun there.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But yeah, the Doctor does a thing that he starts doing the entire serial. Apparently Pip and Jane hated this as well, but J&T wanted to do it, which is that he says things wrong.
Oh no, this is good. This is very good.
He is fit as a trombone. And she's like, fiddle. And he just keeps goofing them up. But he also notices that he's regenerated and doesn't like it. I like when he doesn't like his regeneration. He's always like, what? Ugh, no wonder I have amnesia. I don't want to remember this face. Meanwhile, Mel and Icona are wandering around in the desert and or the mountainous region, and he trips off another one of those bubbles, but she pulls him back before he gets caught in it. And then she's like, see, I saved your life. And he's like, I guess that's true. And then unties her, and now they're buds. Plot point happened. Another thing that Pip and Jane did not like that was added to this script. The Doctor is working on this thing that the Ronnie has said needs to be fixed, and he picks up a tool that looks an awful lot like a spoon.
Awful lot like it.
A couple of spoons, actually. And then he just starts playing spoons, like a like the musical way you play spoons. And they hated it. They're like, how would he know how to play spoons? He's a Time Lord.
Like, how would he know how to play spoons? He's a Time Lord.
He's played a flute before. He speaks English. He hangs out on Earth like 95% of the time. Have you seen the Third Doctor?
I like that that's the end of their ability to suspend disbelief. He would absolutely not know how to play the spoons. He's an alien.
The Ronnie has completely, like, dressed up like Mel, mimicked her voice without even having heard her.
They were gonna steal Solomon for his genius.
But spoons?
Why do they know who Solomon is but don't know about spoons?
Yeah. But apparently this was just a thing that Sylvester McCoy could do. So they're like, eh, do it. So he plays spoons. He plays the spoons on himself at first. And then he plays it on the Ronnie's boobs.
He does a little. He does.
Sylvester McCoy was very excited about that scene, apparently.
Well...
He's like, where else do you get to play spoons on? He said some British word that means cleavage. I don't remember what it was. I had to Google it because I was like, what word did he just use? Oh, it means cleavage. Anyway, she's like, stop fussing with that. And then he says a bad workman always blames his fools. But then she's like, gets over it and continues to inflate his ego so he'll do the thing. Because she's like, he's like, you'd need to be some kind of genius to fix this thing. And she's like, that's what you are. And he's like, oh yeah, that does sound right. There's also a mysterious door that the Ronnie will not say what's behind it. And, like, he's more concerned with that than actually fixing the thing. And he keeps being like, what's behind this door? And she's like, fix the machine. It's not important. There's also a whole scene where she tries to slip him a drink. I don't know what was in the drink because he never actually drinks in the drink. But the whole scene, I was just watching that drink. Like, he is not drinking that drink.
I don't know. Also, she already injected him with stuff. Like, yeah. Missed opportunity. Take care of your shit all at once, Ronnie.
But the doctor refuses to do anything until his memory returns and worries that his regeneration might suck. He's like, that's just who I am now. I'm mopey and pointless.
Relatable.
He says, besides, anyway, I need this part. And she's like, well, maybe you have it in the TARDIS. And he's like, oh, maybe I do. Let's go. And then he heads out. And there's also a scene where she's like, oh, wait, we can't go to the TARDIS. And she's like, gets on her, she's got like a wrist communicator and she calls one of the tetraps and is like, get the girl out of the TARDIS. Get Mel out of the TARDIS. And he's like, we went there and she's already gone? And she's like, well, then find her, you idiots. Then the doctor and Ronnie are on the way there. They pass by Sarn's skeleton.
The doctor has a weird reaction to it.
He's like concerned about it and sad about it. And then the Ronnie's like, oh, these are just, you know, Lacertians. They're boring, simple people who don't know shit. They don't know anything. And he's like, that's a rather harsh way to look at things. She's like, you said that. I learned that from you. And he's like, the more I know me, the less I like me. But then he does like a weird little wave at the skeleton as they leave. But then we get the classic, you know, doctor trying out a new outfit. Which this is the only time there was an extra joke in the extended version. Because it starts off and he's wearing the Napoleon outfit. And he's got his hand in the thing inside the shirt. And he says, why do you always stand like that? And Ryan's like, who? And he's like, Napoleon! And then it goes back to the regular scene. So he tries out Napoleon. He puts on, like, a big hat. And then he tries out...
He goes through the regenerations.
In a weird order. He starts off with Four's red outfit, the burgundy thing. And he also makes, like, a terrible pun after all of them. I don't remember what he says after Four. I know Three, he's got the, like, frilly thing on. He's like, not frilled. And then he does Five... And he's like, do you think this would bowl the ladies over? Then he puts on Two's coat. And then he opens the coat and it's got what he actually wears. It's got suspenders,
the question mark suspenders. He looks like...
It's not question mark suspenders, it's question mark sweater. The question mark sweaters,
you're right. He looks like a cool chemistry teacher. The kind of like science teacher that like lights shit on fire and is like, it's science.
That's the doctor.
Yeah.
He's got a hat on, too. I like it. Looks good.
It's very much like a professor look, but definitely a professor who, like, is incomprehensible.
It does feel kind of second doctor-y in a way I can't put my finger on. This doctor feels a little second doctor-y to me.
Yeah, I think having him have that the second doctor coat was very much a choice.
But then once he's got his whole outfit together, he stares really hard at the Rani, whose face flickers in and out between her face and Mel's face. And then she slaps him in the face and is like, "You're looking at me weird." And he almost remembers the Rani. He's like, I feel like an evil presence. And rah, rah, rah. And then she's like, "Radioactive whatever thing. That's the part we came to look for." And he's like, "Sure.
Radioactive gloves."
Radioactive gloves. And then he says, "Absence makes the nose grow longer." I don't remember why. I've written down everything that I caught that he says that is incorrect, because I enjoy it. Yurok calls the Rani and says he sees Mel, and then calls her Mistress Rani on the communicator, and the doctor hears that, and is like, "Rani, that's the name." And, like, on the view screen on the TARDIS is Mel running around, and she's like, "Oh, is that the Rani?" He's like, I guess it could be.
I do like that in this, the doctor does not question the fact that they are dressed exactly the same.
Right? He's probably like, "Oh, the Rani, she definitely does this thing all the time. She dresses like my companions." Anyway, Mel runs from Yurok, the Tetrap, and gets caught in a bubble, and then flies off into the air. Oh no!
She's gonna explode, but not right away, because that's how the trap is built.
That is the end of episode one. And we're now into episode two, which I've called Mel-O-Dramatics.
Okay.
I got that title from you, by the way. Because the doctor says something about her melodramatics, and you're like, melodramatics.
Yeah, I mean, that's a joke in the episode.
Is it?
Yes. There is emphasis on the mel.
Is there? Okay.
Yeah.
The bubble doesn't explode. It's the only bubble that doesn't explode. It lands on a lake.
If it lands on water, it can't explode.
It bounces off the mountain twice.
Yeah, but it landed in the water. And if it lands in water, it can't explode. Sure. I do kind of like, because there's like a scene of the, what's his face guy?
Icona.
Getting her out of the bubble. And it's very much like diffusing a like landmine that somebody is on.
Yeah, because like it's the base of it. And he's like pulling like a core out of it.
I do like that. You know, that kind of tension of like, you're almost sprung a trap. But also this trap is silly.
Though there is a really nice transition here, because he's trying to deactivate it, and she's like banging on the bubble and like, "Help me," and he pulls the thing out, and then you see an explosion, but then you're like, "Oh no," but you realize it's the doctor working on the thing back at the
we've cut,
and it's just the doctor sparked something when he's trying to fix whatever it is that Ronnie wants fixed.
It's a very, very nice edit.
And then the doctor proceeds to tell the Ronnie how evil the Ronnie is, and she just pushes him to work faster.
She gets like a second or two to kind of give these like eye rolls and disgusted looks.
Their like dynamic is really fun, because like it's interesting because he's got to be like nice and pleasant, but then when he's not looking, be like, "Oh Jesus Christ, I gotta deal with this asshole."
Like, my own words are making me want to vomit.
The Icona gets Mel out of the balloon and they run away, and then she's like, "Are we running scared or heading somewhere particular?" And he says, "The answer to both questions is yes."
It made me laugh really hard for some reason. I think it was the delivery.
And then Icona grabs a gun. And while he's grabbing a gun, Yurok jumps out at Mel. And we see him for the first time. Full body. He just looks like a big bat Muppet.
I do like that throughout the whole first episode, you were like, "I can't wait to see what this character looks like in the cliffhanger." And then you see him right at the beginning of episode two.
Wasn't it a cliffhanger? It's actually like a good chunk into episode two. But Icona has grabbed this gun, which I have called the glitter gun.
It does kind of shoot glitter.
It shoots glitter. He shoots glitter at Yurok and they get away.
So he's got the same weakness as Cybermen. We don't use gold to defeat the Cybermen enough.
Because it's dumb. The doctor's like, "Oh, I burn out this part," but it's very heavily insinuated that the Rani did it. She's like, "Oh, so I put too much, you put too much whatever on this part?" And he's like, "You should know about this. This specific author said so much about it." And she's like, "Who?" And he's like, "This author you really like." She's like, "Oh, I don't remember." And he's like, "But you have a memory like a kangaroo." And she's like, "Elephant." And he's like, "Elephant. Elephant. A running gag." So I like that.
I was going to say, that is a very you way to, like, get your memory back.
A running gag?
To be like, there's some kind of joke I should be making here.
And then they discuss the merits of PHB versus PES, because they need to replace the part. There's some half-assed environmental message there, because he's like, we could use this thing, and he's like, it's, you know, environmentally friendly, and blah, blah, blah. And then she's like, well, what about this other stuff? And he's like, oh, I don't know about that. It's bad for the environment and stuff, and says something about
cheap plastic.
He specifically criticizes Earth, because he's like, your planet is fucking itself up with stuff like this.
We had so much time to learn, and we did nothing. Sorry, what? Doctor Who?
And of course she goes, she's like, I can get you some of the bad stuff. I know where to get it. She's like, the Lacertians make it. And he's like, I thought you said the Lacertians were dumb shits. And she's like, I'm sorry, what? And then closes the door and kind of locks him in. And he's like, well, you said it when we saw that sad skeleton. He says it in such an adorably sad way.
A small voice.
When we saw that sad skeleton. It was very adorable. Also, the doctor plays more spoons at this point. For no reason. Just to play some more spoons. But Mel and Icona meet Faroon. Faroon and Baeus were Sarn's parents. Like, they've been running around all over the place, and they wind up back at the fucking skeleton. Did they just run in a giant circle?
I don't know. Also, I don't care about these characters.
Fair enough. But here's the gist of what Faroon and Baeus' deal is. They both work for the Rani. Baeus does everything that the Rani says, and they're like, stop fucking doing that. And he's like, but I gotta protect my people. And he just betrays people constantly just because he's afraid of what she'll do. And Faroon is like, kind of more like, we need to have a revolution, but still not super much. But she sees
we need to have a small, a polite revolution.
And Icona is like, we need to have a full revolution. But when they see Sarn's body, she just like full on cries. It's just, it shows a shot of her looking, her face is dry. And the next shot, it's just tears aplenty.
Definitely somebody like ran water over her face. Because they're not, the tears are like not in the right spot. Her face is just wet.
They try to sneak into the lab where like all the geniuses are kept and stuff. Faroon can just go on in because she's working for the Rani.
She's supposed to be there.
But Icona distracts the Tetrap while Mel runs in. But Yurok shoots Mel with a tiny glitter net, but it turns out it's not Mel, it's actually he shot the Rani. The dangers of dressing up exactly like another person. So Mel does get inside and she sees the doctor and is like, who the fuck are you? He's like, who the fuck are you? And then like they get into a legitimate fight. She flips him over her shoulder onto the ground. He picks her up and spins her around like they're wrestling. It's fantastic. And then he's like, that wig doesn't even look good on you, and grabs her hair and pulls up.
So he does assume that the Rani is trying to impersonate his companion. Amazing.
And this guy is considered a genius. Because here's the thing, like this scene, this is their first interaction and they're literally fighting each other, which is kind of what happened with the Sixth Doctor. But this is fun.
Yeah, it's a totally different tone.
Tone, context, everything makes more sense.
It is weird how similar it is. But I think it's like, one, really important that it starts with Mel just totally flipping him like a sack of potatoes. Because you're like, okay, so there's not like a huge power imbalance here.
And it's predicated on a misunderstanding rather than just the doctor being an evil bastard for no reason other than regeneration sickness. And it's not just a very long shot of him choking a woman.
They kind of come to this realization of who the other one is relatively quickly.
It's an adorable scene, by the way. Which is they're on opposite sides of a table. And he's like, okay, you think I'm one person, I think you're somebody. We'll just feel each other's pulses. I'll prove that I'm the doctor because I have two heartbeats. And if you're not the Rani,
you only have one.
And so they reach across the table and feel each other's pulses. And it's like really cute. And he like grabs their hand and goes, Mel? And it's like real sweet. I enjoyed it. Like that helps. before they do it, he says the proof of the pumpkin's in the squeezing. Is that a messed up phrase?
Yes, it is.
Okay, what's the actual phrase?
The actual phrase is also messed up, like a lot of phrases. As the phrase that people say is the proof is in the pudding. That came from the proof of the pudding is in the eating.
Oh, so the proof of the pumpkin's in the squeezing.
Yeah.
Okay, good to know. I think I missed a couple, but I think I got.
But
most
people
of
just
them.
Say the proof is in the pudding, which means nothing. It's the same thing, like. I think this is true. Maybe it's just one of those things you read on the internet, but like, blood is thicker than water. That, like, apparently came from the blood of the covenant is thicker than the water of the womb? Like, it literally means, like...
The opposite?
Yes. The family you choose is more important than your biological family. Wild.
Crazy. But what is the proof of the pumpkins and the squeezing? What does that mean?
The proof of the pudding is in eating it.
Yeah, but what is the proof of the pumpkins and the squeezing?
I got no idea what pumpkin squeezing... is about.
You never squeezed a pumpkin?
I've never squeezed a pumpkin.
Would you like to?
Yeah.
All right. It is time. It is.
It is pumpkin squeezing time.
Today is the 2nd of Halloween, by the way. So Yurok and the Rani, now that she's been freed from her tiny net, go to her TARDIS to get whatever material she needs to get, the bad for the environment stuff. And it is a mirrored pyramid. Looks really cool.
It does look pretty neat.
And inside, it's huge. Because it's on a green screen, but it's huge. And she gets a giant fruit roll up and cuts it down into a square. It's what it looks like. It looks like a strip of fruit roll up.
Like some delicious fruit leather. It legitimately made me hungry looking at it.
Meanwhile, the doctor and Mel try to figure out what's going on. There's a view screen in the middle of the table that they leaned over that shows a strange matter asteroid floating nearby. And it could cause a supernova if exploded. Also, it's really fucking heavy. It's like, it's super heavy. It's a really heavy asteroid.
It's so heavy.
This strange matter. By the way, that was almost the title of this serial was...
Heavy?
Strange Matter.
So heavy?
Strange Matter.
So heavy is my favorite episode of Doctor Who.
They're talking and they're like, if only there was some way to get out of here, we could help people or whatever. And then Baeus hears that. And gives them a combination to the door. He says, through the door, 953. And they're like, what? 953. He's like, ah, I should have known. That's my age. And the Ronnies. What does that mean? He says it very weirdly.
They went to school the same year. They're in the same year. So what's their age?
I didn't think of that. I was like, is there some significance to the fact that they're the same age?
Yes. They were in the same class.
Yeah, but time doesn't work linearly like that, does it? For the time? I don't know. Anyway, Baeus shows them the geniuses and a reserved space for the doctor. He's also got a placard with his name on it. The Rani returns. They hide Mel. The doctor helps her put in the fruit roll-up. And he says, where there's a Will, there's a Tom, Dick, and a Harriet.
I liked that one. That was one of my favorites.
The doctor tries to get more info about what's going on, but she's on to him. And activate something. I don't know what it is, to be honest. Whatever they put the fruit roll up in for. And she takes her wig off. But the doctor ties her up and runs off. Also, throughout these first two episodes, we've been seeing a Lacertian go into a feeding pit. What I assume is more tetraps. And this blood-like sludge pours down a trough.
Ooh, it's creepy.
So that's where he runs to hide, is in this feeding pit. And the Rani can't find him, so she's like, ah, fuck it, and leaves and locks him inside. And then all the tetraps surround him. By the way, they hang from the ceiling like bats. And he is surrounded, and that is the end of episode 2. And we are now into episode 3, which I have called The Center of Leisure, or Leisure. Is it leisure or leisure?
Yeah.
Leisure or leisure?
It's a leisure.
Why?
Because it's British.
Oh, okay. Then I misspelled center. Baeus saves the doctor. He lets him out. He also hides in his pod to not be seen by the Rani. But then he gets out and he talks to Baeus and says, time has to be involved in the Rani's plan somehow, because that's the reason why she would need him. But she's a Time Lord. Why doesn't she know about time? They've been stealing fucking people from all over the time.
You know, maybe some people are just bad at math. Rani's she's a brilliant scientist. She's just bad at time.
I guess so. Baeus says, you need to go to the Center of Leisure to see why I'm helping her, why I'm not, you know, doing a revolution. And then the doctor tells him about the asteroid and like, well, stuff has to be done. He's like, he takes out the piece from the machine and says, all good things come to a bend, which I like that one. Baeus is like, why'd you take that piece out of the machine? He's like, because I'm fucking up her plan. He's like, you can't do that. And then they fight for it. And Baez falls down the stairs in the same place the doctor did. Those stairs are dangerous.
Someone put up a sign.
But the doctor gets away with the beast and runs off. Meanwhile, Mel is grabbed by a tetrap and licked. He just sticks his tongue out, licks her on the neck. Very gross.
Didn't like it.
That paralyzes her, though. She is just stiff as a board.
She's so good at this.
She's very good at it. They pick her up and she's just like solid. She's not limp at all. She just
sells the hell out of this.
It's very good. The doctor is running away. He bumps into Icona, who saves him from a tetrap that winds up inside of a balloon bubble and explodes. And then the doctor and Icona team up. The Ronnie sends Faroon to talk to the doctor and says she will exchange Mel for the piece of the machinery he stole. But Faroon, meanwhile, tries to talk to Sensen to Baez, but he thinks the Ronnie will leave them alone when she's done doing what she's doing. Because that's how villains work. But the Doctor and Icona go to the Center of Leisure, which has a great big spiky disco ball hanging.
Of doom.
But everybody's just being, like, chilling, hanging out.
I think this is a little fascinating of an idea, which is that it's like, they're fine. Like, they don't have to do anything but lay around. But, like, the main characters are like, isn't it awful? We're just laying around.
We're being forced to be lazy.
Well,
that's what Icona says. He's like, look at all these lazy people.
But it's not like the Ronnie is making them be lazy.
No.
Like, that's how they live their life.
He tries to talk to him and he cannot. No one will talk to him because they've been instructed not to talk to him. Because
he's a rabble-rouser.
Not by Ronnie either. By Baez. Baez said don't talk to him because he's going to cause trouble. That's how Baez's whole deal is. He's like, I don't want any trouble.
Well, he's about to be proven right because the disco ball is full of bees or some shit.
Little tiny green lights.
In my head, it was full of bees.
They're just like little green dots. They're a terrible special effect. You got that great balloon effect, and then just this is just somebody drew some dots on. The reason they get attacked is because Ronnie learns that tetrap was killed by Icona, and then she's like, tells Baez, well, we got to punish your people. And so everybody runs from these green bees, and they kill some of the Lycurtians. And then that's supposedly like, see, doctor, that's why we don't do things. If you do things, you get murdered.
The disco ball releases the killer bees.
Meanwhile, Mel is hanging up with the tetraps, still 100% stiff as a board, doing a real good job there. There's a great shot of her just swinging back and forth amongst the pet traps. Okay, if it's pet rats, why are they bats? Shouldn't it be tetrabs?
You're gonna have to ask Pip and Jane. I don't have any answers for you.
All right. The doctor and Mel are going to do the exchange. Urak has Mel. And the doctor sets his thing down, the piece he stole. And then Urak grabs it as he's sending Mel on. He's like, you guys are a bunch of fucking suckers. Losers. You'll never win. And then runs off. And then the doctor holds out his arms for a hug. And Mel just walks right through him because she's a hologram. That's a really good effect because the camera's moving. The camera moves into shot. I'm not entirely certain how they did it, but it's good. They're like, why would they do that? Why would they not give you Mel? Why wouldn't they just give her up? And he's like, well, a bird in the hand keeps the doctor away. But he's like, it's going to have the opposite effect. I'm going to get even more angry and want to fuck shit up. Meanwhile, Ronnie wakes Mel to help Baez prepare for the solstice, whatever that means. There's some plans that are happening and it has to happen on the solstice. Why would you get another person that could foil your plans to help another person that could help you foil your plans?
It's just how villains work.
Sure. The doctor thinks she's going to send a rocket at the asteroid because all this time, every time we've been outside, there's been a conspicuous just like launch pad with a rocket on it. Then everyone's like, look at that. What's that about, you think? Can't be good.
I don't know, but it's got Chekhov written on the side.
The doctor and Icona are talking about it, and the doctor's going to go in, and he says, out of the frying pan, into the mire.
That's pretty good.
Icona causes a distraction for the doctor, like he did for Mel, but this time it doesn't work, because the doctor is immediately surrounded. Doffs his hat at them, and they lick him. The tetraps do. It's not the Lycurtians or the Ronnie licking him. It is the tetraps who have the paralyzing tongue.
It is the pet rats.
They take the doctor inside, and they put him inside of his case, his predestined location. And then we see what the Ronnie's working with. She goes behind that door that's been shut this whole time and There's a great big brain behind it. Big brain.
I like the brain because it's I guess it's like all the people, right, who are like contributing to it. But it is just ADHD central because it's all these different like voices. Like, what about this? What if we tried that? Maybe. And it's like, yeah, that is just like one single ADHD brain.
And it like pulsates too. Like, it's clearly somebody inside it just pushing the skin of it, I guess. But we find out like the brain wants a supernova. So the machine is turned on and the doctor is plugged into the brain. And he just shakes and rattles. And
it's a little terrifying.
Does weird things with his mouth. And that's the end of the episode. That's the end of episode 3. And we're now into episode 4, which I called A Strange Matter. I called it this before I realized the serial was at one point called Strange Matter. So Urak suggests killing all the Lycurgians to the Rani because they got all they need. And she's like, now we might need the labor later.
The labor later?
The labor later. The labor later. That sounds like something Pip and Jane would write. All the brains converse and the doctor makes terrible jokes. Just trying to fuck shit up inside the brain. Because, like, it's not the doctor. It's the doctor inside the brain. His brain waves. It's like, blessed are the pie makers, for they shall make light pastry. Einstein says, it is a fundamental postulate that all motion is relative. And the doctor says, you wouldn't say that if you met my uncle.
Every dogma has its day. That's a good one.
They keep trying to figure shit out, and he's just like, joke! Joke!
It's an ADHD brain.
And the Ronnie's like, ah, fuck! I didn't think that he would get in there and fuck shit up. I don't know why I didn't suspect that. So she goes and releases him before he can cause more mental damage. And he grabs her and locks her in his case, but doesn't turn it on because two wrongs don't make a left turn. So she's trapped in it. She's banging on it like, let me out. Urak goes to the Center of Leisure and puts ankle bracelets on all of the Lycurgians. And they're like, well, what does this do? And he's like, oh, cool, let me show you. And he turns it on, and one of them explodes and turns into a skeleton. Because
they had that skeleton.
They had that skeleton. And then there's a scene of Baeus walking past the Ronnie's case, and she's like, let me out. And he's like, I won't do it. Ha ha, I've grown. And then she's like, I'll hurt people if you don't. And he's like, oh, okay. And then he lets her out. What a spineless asshole. He lets Ronnie out. And then she just goes and talks to the doctor and stuff. It's not like, I don't know, there's no, like, grab him or what. She just has a chat. She just explains her plan. I don't.
I mean, to be fair to Ronnie, this works.
Yeah. She says the only.
She just kind of appeals to, like, his natural inclination to problem solve.
So we get this huge exposition scene. The only way to smash Strange Matter, which we have established is very, very, very heavy. The only way to smash it was with more Strange Matter. So the Ronnie is working on an alternative. But why? To make helium too and chronons and
science
with the supernova, and it'll make a time manipulator. The chronons in the atmosphere will. There's a visual guide on screen as she's explaining it, where it looks, you see the planet and the atmosphere changes, and then suddenly it looks like a giant fucking nipple. That's a time manipulator. It's just a giant space nipple. And then she's like, I can then manipulate time and change things. I'll fix evolution. I can change anything I want.
Can't she already do that?
No. She specifically wants to make the dinosaurs the dominant species on Earth.
She loves those dinosaurs so much.
I love that, to be honest, because she had dinosaurs in Mark of the Ronnie. So
yeah.
It's consistent.
The Ronnie's just a 10-year-old boy.
Dinosaurs. Or Ray. She's Ray.
Or Ray Friesen.
Hey, correct. Ray. She says some technobabble bullshit, and the doctor's like, oh, no, wait, you mean this. Like, corrects her. And she's like, ha! Didn't even have to plug you into a thing, you fool. And, like, that's the piece she needed to achieve
Dinosaurs.
My Hargle! She makes the thing that's strong enough to smash the dark, the strange matter, and it's called Loy Hargle. That's the new element made. By the way, that's an anagram for Holy Grail.
Pip and Jane, what are you doing?
Well, you see, Solomon is from the Bible. So is the Holy Grail.
Is it?
I mean, it's...
It's part of the lore, but not yeah. part of the canon.
Loy Hargle has been achieved.
Because the way that, like, the show lets you know that it worked is by, like, flash. There's, like, a screen flashing the word Loy Hargle, and you're like, okay? What the fuck does that mean? And I remember asking it on the stream and somebody going, it's an anagram for Holy Grail. And I was like, okay? What is Loy Hargle in the context of this show?
I didn't realize it while watching it, but through rewatching it and for GIFs and making notes, it is the element that is the alternative to Strange Matter that is strong enough to destroy Strange Matter, to cause the supernova that will change the atmosphere to make the time manipulator.
Okay. Loy Hargle is literally not dropped until there's like a thing that lights up that says Loy Hargle achieved, and you're like, congratulations, I guess.
Yep, it took me a while to piece that together. So, but the Mel and the Doctor run out. Mel shoots Urak with a glitter net. The Doctor grabs the glitter gun and says, waste net, want net. They run out, and they go to the center of leisure, and they remove all of the bracelets from the Lycurtian's ankles. Where there's a will, there's a beneficiary. And they keep the bracelets for a plan they have. So the Ronnie starts a rocket launch countdown, which we hear pretty much in real time. I haven't had one of those since, like,
First Doctor era.
And she heads for her TARDIS, and Urak's like, I would like to go with you. And she's like, I'm sure you would, but you gotta stay behind to stop the Doctor should he try anything. And Urak is very uncomfortable about this, because it seems likely that this place could, that she's just going to leave him, or this place is going to explode. I mean, it's going to turn the whole planet into a giant space nipple, right? So he's like, I feel like something's amiss here. But the Doctor and Mel get back. They remove the geniuses from their cases. They fiddle with the rocket launch, because Urak's just not there now, because he apparently bolted. They put the bracelets on the brain, so I guess they're just going to blow the brain up. But then Baius finally is like, I will stay behind and make sure things go okay. I will be I'm going to do a heroic sacrifice, basically. But they manage to stop the countdown. The countdown stops at 4. The Doctor rushes out and finds Ronnie out near her TARDIS and says, your plans are foiled and the people are going to attack and everything's, you know, your plans are foiled. I said that twice.
I have a question about their plans, though.
Yeah.
Did they get foiled?
Yes.
Okay.
And she's like, my plans are not foiled, actually. And she fiddles with her bracelet, her, like, communicator thing, and she sets off the bracelets, which destroy the brain and kill Baius, and sets off the rocket. Did she know about the... No! She was going to kill the people. She thought she was killing all the Lycurtians.
Yes.
But she destroyed the brain instead. But the downside of that is it set off the rocket. And then Ronnie gets in her TARDIS and leaves. And the Doctor is like, runs up to everybody. And he's like, who are all watching the rocket take off. And he's like, listen, there was a delay. It's going to miss that Strange Matter asteroid altogether. Don't worry about it. And then he crosses his fingers behind his back for luck. But the rocket does miss. The Doctor gathers up all the geniuses in his TARDIS, which there's way more than there was inside, I believe. And he says their goodbyes. And Einstein is very interested in the TARDIS console. And the Doctor's like, I'll explain it to you later. It's relative. They say their goodbyes. They're like, it's a bummer that the Ronnie got away. And we cut inside her TARDIS. And she is hung up with all the tet traps are hanging up inside her TARDIS, and she is hanging up there with them tied. She was supposed to be hanging upside down, but she had like a blood vessel or something in her eye.
Ooh.
Pop. So they're like, oh fuck. And then they flipped her right side up. But the tet traps have taken her hostage, basically, because, you know, she was going to betray them.
Yeah.
And that's the last we see of the Ronnie, I believe.
What a shame. Quit right? Bringing back the Daleks.
But back at the Lycurtians, the Doctor gives Icona the cure for the green insect things. It's just this bottle of blue liquid that he stole from the Ronnie, and is like, she always has a backup plan.
Sapphire gin.
And then he just grabs it and pours it out, and he's like, we have to come up with our own solutions to things. Why?
Could you imagine? That would be like somebody... Like,
here's a cure for cancer. Nope, we didn't figure it out.
You say that, but like, here's a COVID-19 vaccine. No, thank you.
I'm going to take horse medicine instead. Dumb fucks. Anyway, the doctor says, well, time and tide melts the snowman. And Mel says, waits for no man. He's like, who's waiting? I'm ready to go.
Cute.
She's like, you're going to take a lot of getting used to. He says, I'll grow on you, Mel. I'll grow on you. And then they turn us out.
That's that's a nice way for a new doctor to end a serial.
I think it's better to be like, I'm the doctor whether you fucking like it or not, idiots.
That is one of the best fucking moments in, is it the 11th hour, the first 11th Doctor?
Yeah.
Serial where he walks through all of them and you're just like, oh shit, that's the doctor. There's no fucking question about it.
Oh, that's such a good episode of television.
It really is. I don't know, I kind of found this one, like, it was charming in its difference of just being like, you'll warm up to me.
Yeah, and honestly, I already have. I enjoyed Sylvester McCoy a lot in this. But I'm going to save that for final thoughts, which we will do after this quick break.
Welcome to Dr. Geek's Laboratory.
Dr. Geek here with another reminder that the ESO Network is pro-science and pro-vaccine. We urge you to be a superhero and protect yourself, your family, and your fellow geeks around the world. Don't be fooled by the forces of evil and their anti-science misinformation campaign. Consult the latest CDC guidelines, your doctor, and get the COVID vaccine today.
So, Brittany, Martha, tell me about your podcast.
Oh, no.
It's like we're in sync, but also kind of a disaster.
We are always a disaster.
So our podcast is fun if you want to hear two people talk about and complain about stuff that they love and also hate.
And drink.
And drink.
And the show is called?
Oh. but first, let's talk nerdy.
And you can find us on the ESO Network.
Ba-ding. See you next Tuesday.
And we're back. Hey, Tony.
I have a question for you.
What's your question?
Do you know what time it is?
It is 3:10 p.m.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah. Shoes on the other foot now, isn't it?
Anyway, it's time for final thoughts.
I liked it. I thought it was fun. There's definitely some parts that are, like, the first two episodes are better than the third episode. If you cut out the third episode and just did 1, 2, and 4, it'd be a lot better. There's definitely some bits that drag. And there's definitely a lot of filler. Going through and making the notes, it's like, there's not a lot happening. But it's fun. There's a lot of good dialogue, and, like, Ronnie and the Doctor playing off each other is very fun. So you don't notice that it's mostly just filler. But, yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought it was, it's just fun. There's nothing, like, super deep about it. But it's introducing a new Doctor, and it does it well, I think. Sylvester McCoy just instantly is, like, the Doctor. It's great. I didn't have many problems with it. I thought it was just a good time. Like, not the most amazing, mind-blowing thing ever, but solid fun, which...
We haven't had.
Yeah.
You can say it. We haven't had it in a while.
This feels like a course correction and a good one. What about you?
I don't have too much more to add to that. It was... I did think a little bit when we were talking about this serial. I was like, this is going to end up being one of those ones where we, like... shit talk it all the way through and then get to the end and be like, man, what a good serial. Because it's, I mean, if you spend any amount of time looking at it, it's not like the most well-constructed thing or anything, but it is a breath of fresh air coming out of the era that we're coming out of, where you're like, oh, thank God, we've got jokes again, and people, you know, a companion and a doctor who know how to play off of each other, and it doesn't seem, like, so adversarial all the time.
Even when they're fucking fighting each other.
Even when there's a literal fight scene, it still is able to be goofy and not like, this is an abusive situation. And yeah, it's honestly just such a relief, especially going into a new era and not knowing much about it. And the show has a tendency to be radically different things at different times. And so it's kind of a relief to be like, oh, I think I'm going to like what's coming up.
Before we go, is there anything we need to plug?
The secret project that I've been working on. We have sent set a tentative date, which for me is a deadline, that I should have enough episodes to go live in February.
Ooh.
So I am putting that out into the universe because if it's like December and you haven't heard anything about it, you can yell at me because we have an episode edited and I would like to have 3 or 4 before we launch, and just gotta sit down and make myself do it, and that's hence the pseudo plug that I'm giving now.
Now
I can receive pressure from the universe.
Please pressure Tony
to make me do things. I promise you, it is going to be, like, I just recently finished the first episode, and I got so excited making it, and I hate listening to, like, I don't listen to this podcast, because I hate my voice, but I'm editing the other one, so I had to. I was getting really excited, because I was like, this is good.
Hey, spoilers, this one's good, too.
Yeah, but I won't listen. I talk way more in this. The other one involves talking, you know, doing interviews and talking to other people. I don't really have anything to plug anymore. I've left my position where I was working on The Unseen World. It's still all up and it's still available to watch, and I'm still really proud of it. And if you want to check it out, that would be cool. But right now I am working on new and different stuff and figuring out what I'm going to do next. So
there's a lot to talk about to say.
Nothing. All right. That's fine. Don't ask me next time.
No. I have a couple things. Legendary Forces has started the Star Wars podcast. Check that out. And I either have just wrapped up or I'm about to wrap up the 40s. And my comics completist series for thedip.com, that's DIPP.com, where I'm reviewing all comic book media. I should have either just finished the 40s or about to finish the 1940s. So I'm not sure what's happened because this episode goes up in the future. But if you like this episode of the podcast, you can check out more on WatchYourRassilon.com. You can also find our podcast, our Patreon, our Amazon wish list, and more at Linktree/Watchathon. That's LinkTr.ee/Watchathon. And special thanks again to Matt Golden for sponsoring this episode.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
Golden! You can check him out at MattGolden.xyz. And also a special thanks to Vincent E.L. for providing us with our amazing theme song.
Thank you, Vince.
Check out more of their music at soundcloud.com/VincentEL or VincentEL.bandcamp.com. And one of those actually has a new song on it called Sampler Man. That's very funny. Tune in next time when we talk about Paradise Towers with a brand new special guest, Steve Conway, author of Shiprocked and our... like fan. He also worked on a pirate radio. It's very, very weird that he's a fan of ours. I don't understand it, but it's cool, and he's gonna be on the podcast next time. But until next time, keep calm and watch along.
Oh, I like it. Goodbye, and I love you in a platonic parasocial way.
I was just fucking up because the doctor always fucks things up.
I like it.
Ah, thank goodness in this regeneration I've regained my impeccable sense of haute couture.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping at the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.